Welcome back, Hemingway listeners, to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Just submitting now to the subreddit the announcement of the next book. Just done it, and now I'm going to mark it as an announcement. Make announcement, yes. Oh, I'm going to sneeze too. Where am I? The next book has been announced, and it is The American by Henry James. Very exciting stuff. I'll remove the post about voting because obviously voting is now finished. We had 168 votes, pretty good amount of votes, and the winner had 38% of those votes for The American. The runners-up was 22%, Madame Bovary, and then 12% for Of Human Bondage. So, pretty clear win there by Henry James. Exciting stuff. If you want to have a little chit-chat about that, head over to the subreddit. You'll find the post announcing the book and leave your thoughts there. Now, what are we talking about today? Chapter 8, Part 12. Brain offline was my discussion prompt. Brain offline. Jan Brunt said, I am so seriously bored by Levin's spiritual awakening. Swim said the Mumma Fishy said, I really do not think I could care any less about Tolstoy's midlife crisis, aka Levin's spiritual journey. What I have ruminated on about was the epigraph, vengeance is mine and I will repay. First of all, it was unusual to include an epigraph at this time. Second of all, it would appear that since Anna kills herself at the end, that God has exacted this vengeance on her because of her cheating ways. I don't think that it's true. Karenin is vengeful against Anna by withholding her son from her. Anna is vengeful against Vronsky by killing herself in the hope he will be miserable forever. Society is vengeful against Anna for violating their rules. Even the sainted Levin is vengeful when he is happy that Kitty is miserable. There are many interpretations of this epigraph. I agree with this one. In the New Testament, Romans 12:19, a merciful God tells his followers to forget themselves and their egos because they are fleeting in comparison with the eternality and omniscience of God. But there are other interpretations. Miniel says, I don't know if Tolstoy wanted to spend the last chapters trying to convert all the readers, but I don't really like it at all. As an atheist, my biggest issue with these chapters is that even if I agreed that faith / religion makes life more meaningful and gives us moral values, it doesn't change the fact that I simply don't believe in God. In fact, I do believe that religion can give life more meaning. It would be nice to believe that there is something after this life, and I sometimes even envy people who can believe that, but I just can't. Sorry, just having a little beverage there. Today's podcast is brought to you by the beverage water. Get yours today. Starfall 15 said, nothing to add to this discussion, just saw this article online concerning the stock market. Your 401k right now is like your face, don't touch it. Turn off CNBC, change the radio station in the car to the oldies, change your password, log out of Twitter, delete your Facebook account, and start reading a Russian novel. So here, we're good, I guess. I don't know what news website you're reading, Starfall, but I like it. I Am Norwegian said, yay, more Levin Farm chapters. I've gotten that feeling a few times watching people bustling about and wondering what drives them, what's it all for. I still do sometimes. I wonder if Levin is going to convert because a peasant pointed out that a good man simply lived according to God's truth. Al Treat said, yawn. I don't know why Tolstoy felt like including this in here. Not the first time I have wondered this about his choices. Levin's / Tolstoy's thoughts are hardly original, maybe they were for the time, and worse, they are given poor expression. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Everyone's a bit over at Tolstoy. Why does he do this at the end of a good book? War and Peace was a great book. And he just ends it with rambling. Like, oh, I don't know. I don't have an explanation. It's like he needs to do a little knowledge drop before he finishes the book. Just why? I don't know. I don't know. It's really bad. Levin remembered, this is chapter 13. Levin remembered a recent scene between Dolly and her children. Left by themselves, the children had started cooking raspberries over a candle and pouring jets of milk into their mouths. When their mother caught them at this pursuit, she began in Levin's presence to impress on them how much trouble what they were wasting had cost grown-up people. That trouble had been taken for them, that if they broke cups, they would not have anything to drink tea out of, and if they spilt milk, they would not have anything to eat, and would die of hunger. And Levin was struck by the quiet, dull disbelief with which the children listened to these remarks from their mother. They were only grieved that their amusing game had been ended, and they did not believe a word of what she was saying. And they could not believe it, because they could not imagine the whole volume of all they consumed, and therefore could not convince that what they were destroying was the very thing they lived on. That's quite a different matter, they thought, and not in the least interesting or important, because those things always have been and always will be. It is always the same thing over and over again. There is no need for us to think about that. It's all ready for us. But we want to think out something of our own invention and new. Now we've thought of putting raspberries in a cup and cooking them over a candle, and of pouring milk into each other's mouths like fountains. That is amusing and new, and not at all worse than drinking out of cups. Don't we, and didn't I, do just the same when intellectually I sought for the meaning of the forces of nature and the purpose of human life, he went on thinking. And don't all the philosophic theories do the same when, by ways of thought strange and unnatural to man, they lead him to a knowledge of what he knew long ago, and knows so surely that without it he could not live. Is it not evident in the development of every philosopher's theory that he knows in advance as indubitably as the peasant, Theodore, and not a whit more clearly than he, the chief meaning of life, and only wishes by a questionable intellectual process to return to what everyone knows? Excuse me. Oh, I'm drinking water to stay awake. When the flavor of water becomes a source of entertainment, you know you're bored. Oh my God. Come on, Tolstoy. What are you doing? What are you doing? Supposing now that the children were left alone to procure or make cups for themselves and to milk the cows and so on, would they play tricks? No, they would die of hunger. Suppose we, with our passions and thoughts, were left without the conception of God, a creator, and without a conception of what is good, and without an explanation of moral evil. Try to build up anything without these conceptions. We destroy because we have our fill spiritually. We are children indeed. Whence comes the joyful knowledge I have in common with the peasant, and which alone gives me peace of mind? Where did I get it? I, educated in the conception of God as a Christian, having filled my life with the spiritual blessings Christianity gave me, brimful of these blessings and living by them, I, like a child, not understanding them, destroy them. That is, I wish to destroy that by which I live. But as soon as an important moment of life comes, like children when they are cold and hungry, I go to him, and even less than the children whose mother scolds them for their childish mischief, do I feel that my childish attempts to kick because I am filled should be reckoned against me. Yes, what I know not by my reason, but because it has been given to me, revealed to me, and I know it in my heart by faith, in the chief thing which the church proclaims. The church, Levin repeated to himself. He turned over, and leaning on his elbows, began looking at a herd of cattle in the distance approaching the river on the other side. But can I believe in all that the church professes? He asked himself, testing himself by everything which might destroy his present peace of mind. He purposely thought of those teachings of the church which always seemed most strange to him and that tried him. The creation, but how do I account for existence, by nothing, the devil and sin, and how do I explain evil, a saviour? But I know nothing, and can know nothing but what is told me and to everybody. And it now seemed to him that there was not one of the dogmas of the church which could disturb the principal thing, faith in God, in goodness as the sole vocation of man. Each of the church's doctrines might be represented by faith in serving truth rather than serving one's personal needs, and each of them not only did not infringe that belief, but was necessary for the fulfillment of the chief miracle ever recurring on earth, the possibility of everyone, millions of most diverse people, sages and idiots, children and old men, peasants, Lvov, Kitty, beggars and kings, indubitably understanding one and the same thing and forming that life of the spirit, which alone is worth living for and which alone we prize. Lying on his back, he was now gazing at the high, cloudless sky. Don't I know that that is infinite space and not a rounded vault? But however I may screw my eyes and strain my sight, I cannot help seeing it round and limited, and despite my knowledge of it as limited space, I am indubitably right when I see a firm blue vault, and more right than when I strain to see beyond it. Levin ceased to think, and only as it were hearkened to mystic voices that seemed to be joyously and earnestly discussing something. Can this really be faith, he wondered, afraid to believe in this happiness. My God, I thank thee, he uttered, repressing his sobs and wiping away with both hands the tears that filled his eyes. All right, there we go, another chapter down. Levin found a faith. Oh. Have your say over at the Hemingway List subreddit. Thanks for listening. I will see ya tomorrow.